And thank you very much for your coming. Because we are aware that there's been a change of leadership in the province, it will then be important for that we make introductions. And we don't want to assume that the last time that Eric was here, even to us as members, some of the members were not here when you were around. So it's then going to be important that we do that. And for housekeeping, those that will be coming for the first time in the committee, phones are silent, questions are only asked by members to the presenters. Only presenters that are responding and how they respond depends to them. Any person who is not part of the designated people to respond doesn't respond. If one to ask questions, then we break for tea and then rub shoulders with the national, I'm sorry, with the provincial Department of Health. So quickly, honorable members, so that we know who is here. I'll start from my side. I'm in the Dr. Joy, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Next to me is Lucas Machalamba, who is the secretary of the committee at the extreme right. Our content advisor at the back is Asanda, who is the researcher for the study group of the African National Congress. And then others will come in as we are continuing the presentation. How you will do the presentation, and it will depend on you, what the perspective. Over to you, Honorable Members. You use the mic when you tell us your name and your surname, and where are you, which position you hold in the provincial department. Over to you, Honorable Members.
Good afternoon, this is Dr. S. Kembekwayo, member of the Committee on Health. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Lindy Wilson, member of the Portfolio Health. Thank you.
Over to you, MC
and your team. Good afternoon, I am MC Helen Sorfogas. I apologize for my voice, but I'm sure the rest of the team, if you allow, Anthropologist Chairperson and members of the interview themselves.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Tobile Mengashe. I'm the Head of Department of Health, Eastern Cape. Good afternoon, Member Chair. My name is Nita Mantiwan. I'm the Chief Director for Hospital Services.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, Members, MEC, the whole House. It's Nalisa Mavoso, the DDG, HR and Corporate Services.
Thank you. Good evening to Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Fabi Kay. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Department.
Good evening, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Patrick Maduna, Deputy Director General for Health in the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Members and the Chair. My name is Lambert Puso. I'm the Head of Infrastructure in the Cape Health Department.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Dr. Van Ryan. I'm from the South African Medical Association. I'm General Manager.
Good
members. I am Awutu Zumana, the parliamentary advisory officer of the MEC of Health.
Good evening, once more. My name is Oscar Mahali. I'm the acting national spokesperson for the National Department of Health.
Number one, my name is Kaya from the Office of the Deputy Minister. Sorry, evening, honorable members. I'm a journalist. My name is Abdullah Chok. I'm not with the department.
In fact, I was asking from Jogan.
Good evening, I'm Tamal Khan from Business Day.
Made up of DMG.
No, thank you very much, Honorable MC. We will we have called all colleagues, you are the first one. Because we want to have an understanding of the situation of the state of the health sector in all our provinces. And we're doing that precisely because you will be aware what is applied to the National Health Act in terms of the role of the executive member and that of the HOT. And that is the National Department, and it's a concurrent function, but the National Department is able to provide support, and we want to have that thing. But in the center is that health services are provided at the provincial level. That's why it's happening. There's no clinic in the National Department. Clinic and districts are at the provincial level. And therefore, we really wanted to have a friend. We had a presentation from the Office of the Minister of Compliance. We had a presentation from the AG. We had a presentation from the National Department. But it is important that we get a feel from those people that have given the responsibility to ensure that health services are provided. At a provincial level. We will require you to be open and frank to us, because if you don't do that, you won't be able to ask us. We are not here to judge you, we are not here to lambast you, but we will be critical in areas where we think that we are critical. It's not because of anything, it's because both yourselves and ourselves and the National Department of Health are given the responsibility to ensure that people receive services in line with what is outlined both in the Constitution and in terms of the Bill of Rights and the National and the National Government. So that's where we are. How you will make your presentation, MEC, it will depend on you. You are the one who is the captain of the ship. The only thing that I would just try to caution, don't come close too much to this mic, because it gives a glare, but may try to be audible because we do record. So we hand over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I hope that I have not made my first mistake by not as the new MEC. I was just told yesterday that it's actually a month, and I kept on saying I'm only 3 weeks in the department. I have not done an overview, Honorable Chairperson and members. Perhaps it was just an oversight, because when looking at it, it was very prescriptive on the areas that you would want those salient points to be lifted. So with your indulgence, I will hand over to the HOD to deal with it, and he will then delegate if there are specific issues that the specific chief directors they need to take up. Thank you.
Over to you.
Thank you, MEC, and Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. As
MC was saying is that we had a very a number of very definite areas that the Honourable Chair asked us to report on, and we have now made the preparation. I have about 7 slides that I'm going to, 5-7 slides that I'm going to go through. I have the team that is really going to help me with the presentation, but I will take the first part of the presentation and provide the required information to the Honourable Members. The area that we were asked to cover was the service delivery environment and the healthcare access, our referral system, the emergency services, the pharmaceuticals, the forensic pathology, the TV services, the psychiatric services, the medical waste, the finances, the human resource, infrastructure, and then when we conclude, we'll make some recommendations of the chair. The service delivery environment, I'm going to start with that of the chair. And I think we have a number of slides that talk to this, and most of the information that I'm going to talk to are actually in the report. I think what we understood by the service delivery environment was really the one of the members wanted to know very specific areas, the demographic profile of the province. And so we spent a little time to try and speak to that. I think what is really important is that in the province, we have a fairly young population, almost two-thirds of the population is about 30 years and below. This is important because with that level of the population, then the questions and the issues that I will confront there are primarily issues of reproductive health and children. Part of the population, 12.5% of the population, is under 5. We will come back to this particular question as we deal with the specific areas and we highlight certain things. The province is made in the geographic area of 8 districts. This is controversial with the municipal districts. And what's important in these districts, Honorable Chairperson, is that Eastern Cape's got 8 districts, 5 of our districts, they belong to the lowest quintile 1, which is the most deprived area. And only 3 of our districts, 2, which are the 2 metros, they are level 5, which is a very high developed area. 1 is Sarabat, 1 is about level 2. So again, we're going to come back on this particular part because the levels of the deprivation have a very huge impact in terms of social determinants of health. Just to say that in terms of the number of people, the majority of the people, Oak Tambo has got the highest number of people, and again, it's a quintile 1 district. About 3.8% of the people reside in Oak Tambo, and then the second biggest one is Nelson Mandela with 17.6%. And these are very two different geographic areas. Nelson Mandela is a village, a metro, and Oak Tambo is a very rural. Of course, we have got districts that have got low population, that is geography and Sarabat. The socio-economic profile. We are primarily a rural province. I already made the point that with being the low 5 meter, there are high levels of poverty and high levels of unemployment. This has got a very bearing in the way how we actually provide services and the people who have to come for our services. The poverty rate in the province is estimated around 7.2%. The most affected areas are really the upgrades from Amato and Kristian and Boa Tambo. Again, these social determinant issues are going to come up when we present some of the things that are side districts. The burden of disease is very similar to the country, and we have the rest of the country quite a good burden of disease. Primarily, it's the TB, it's the HIV, the non-communicable diseases, and injuries, trauma and injuries. Actually quite interesting that in the Eastern Cape, because of the long distances, many of our hospital facilities and some of the deaths are actually from the communicable diseases like the TB are really
member in the province, the general mortality rate is 100,000 live deaths, about 120 cases. And then the national target is 370 million. That's in the I'm going to move very quickly, Honorable Chairperson, and still now talk about the clinical services and the healthcare aspects. Finally, in the, I will speak more or less to the principle in here. The visits to the primary care facilities, we had about 15.4 million visits in the DC health facilities. These are mainly primary healthcare facilities. That gives us a rate of about 2.8 visits per person in response. And the department has about 732 primary healthcare facilities, of which 41 of those are community health facilities. The 41 facilities offer about 24 hours. The 56 hospitals offer also 24 hours. The number of patients registered for CCMV are listed there. I just thought in the economy of labor that, but I think we are also following some of the NHI initiatives to woo patients out of health facilities by providing the distribution of medicines for chronic care within areas that are close to them. The second area is really what is really some areas where we really created an increased access as part of the streams of the NHI. The NHI in this stage that we could be doing outreach, and one of the very strong programs of the NHI has been the integrated school health program. And I think we just want to show how we are really moved very fast to create in terms of reaching the number of children in schools and providing the integrated school health program that includes the assessment of young ones and also the provision of the HPV vaccine. The province of the 726 facilities, I just want to make this particular point, Honorable Chairperson, that we actually have the highest number of health facilities. Actually, our facilities are more than AZN. AZN has got a population of 10 million plus. We only have about 6.9. We have more facilities than them. And I think what's also very unique about our facilities, these are very old facilities. And they were never really designed for what is required now in education. And the big issue is that most of our facilities have a huge backlog in terms of the quality of the facilities because of long-term neglect and the lack of maintenance. So on the ideal clinic status, we came really from behind, very far away. And we really trying to work very hard to achieve the data. Now, as honorable members would know, that there are a number of very critical elements that are required to meet the criteria. So our ideal clinic is still very reasonably we have about these four facilities that have reached the ideal clinic. These facilities in the indices of measuring, they are reaching at least over 279. And then we have about 29 that are and then there's only one that we really call the true ideal clinic, which is one. So we have about 2,000 facilities. As you can see, it's only just about less than 10% of the 776 facilities that really have reached ideal clinic. We will talk about this when we present the strategy for infrastructure, because our clinics don't just need ideal, they need a major innovation and changes, even just to reach some of them as we never reach ideal clinic. On the referral system, we speak a little bit about the nature of our referral system. We actually have a very interesting and unique system. We have both a bottom-up and a top-down referral system. What we have been using as part of the NHI, the wide-based outreach team and the integrated student programs, do keep people who really need facilities and they do their own referral. That's a community-based referral system in terms of that. But we also have a referral system between facilities. So we will have a clinic that refers to the next facility with the community health center. talk about the emergency services. And I think it's an area that has been of great interest, and I think in the past 2 years or so, the Human Rights Commission came to the province and really looked at the EMS services. We have two major that we really have as a response to the emergency. One of them is really the response at major urban areas, and then there's also a response time at rural areas. We have, on the understanding of the nature of our rural services, we have response services that still less than satisfactory both in the urban and rural, but I think if you compare urban, we are able to respond much better in the urban areas as compared to the rural areas. There are a number of factors that really bring this, and we will talk when we go to the specific in terms of services that we have. So the slide that is actually showing is simply showing the different responses in terms of the PI, which is the, in the urban areas, and the PI P1 at the rural areas, and then the inter-facilities and transfers. The team will actually be able to talk to these. The next slide really deals with the availability of EMS services. I just want to generally bring point that on this slide, is that our embassies, in terms of the total number of embassies, 415, we don't have all the 416 embassies on the road. I think it's really in terms of the number of embassies that are on the road, that is 254. Yes, that's the 254. The rest of the IMS is they're either in transit actually in the mechanical and all that. So even though we have the embassies, we don't have all our embassies. We'll speak a little bit on later on as we share about some of the challenges that we face with the EMS and then speak more about the EMS. The slide just shows the distribution of the EMS in terms of the allocation of the embassies in between the different districts. And, yeah, also the numbers of those that seems like those numbers have been taken off and the numbers that are non-operational. We also have a patient transport system which is part of our fleet. These around there are hundreds of those and again the stamp that have been taken off and the two that are going up to about 169. Some are actually sitting in the government garage for repair. Again, these are the fleet that we use quite substantially in transporting patients that don't need, that are not very sick, in between the hospital and taking patients home when they require. In terms of the EMS staff, we really have about 2,185. The different types we have is the basic DAA, and then there's an advanced ambulance, and then there are those which actually have more almost like a paramedic. I think the most important thing with this is that we have a very high number of the DAA, which is obviously in terms of the new EMS, and these will have to be moving slowly as part of the system. And we don't have the right number in terms of the AEAs and then about support in terms of EMS. But again, we still have the number of people. Currently, in terms of really the norms, we should have 10 persons at each ambulance. And on average, we are using about 8 persons for which is still sufficient, but it actually loads up in terms of over time. I'm going to speak a little bit about the challenges in the EMS, because I think it's an important area. I think the most important, of course, is really our survey and our roles and our ability to make upgrades. The second part is that we find that because most of the EMS in local government is slightly better off than the one that was in the province, and the professionalization process has actually been in place to try and cover those differences. And because most of the EMS are very dispersed, the quality of the EMS infrastructure, we're not happy ourselves. And one of the things that really we trying to work on is to try and really rebuild some of the spaces, some of the actually in houses. And we have a huge skills shortages of the advanced life support EMS, and we have to need to recruit from other provinces to cover up. But it is good now that we're trying to build a capacity and bring more people to EMS services. We've been actually looking at a number of very urgent responses in terms of trying to get advanced support, like additional person to building, and we're trying to put more of those. And we're working about to upgrade some of the basic skills and EMS persons and providing them with additional capacities where they can go to an advanced level. We also started a task team that's going to make sure that we're meeting the EMS regulations. One of the things in the EMS is really the tracking of the EMS vehicles and making sure where they are and being able to provide support when it's actually needed. We're looking at also starting to defend and put a foreign contact with dispatch. The EMS services is primarily a logistics system, so if you don't have very good logistics, you might not be able to see the EMS. Obviously, most of our teams and many people of the EMS, they are really people who are faced with a lot of trauma on a daily basis. And it's something that we really recognize as an important contribution that we should have to provide a fairly strong awareness and psychosocial support in terms of the EMS team. So I'm going to move to the pharmaceutical services. Basically, the pharmaceutical services, we have, the province has two major depots. The one in Elizabeth and another one in Tata. These depots are responsible for supplying the totality of the province in terms of health services. In the province, we have what is called a demand approval from the community health center, where community health centers are able to call and call the medicine directly into that. But what is the other challenge in medicine is really to try and make sure that the distribution and the request from the patient is well managed. We're using also part of the national program of what is called SDC.
Yes.
Staff visibility system.
Yes.
That staff visibility system is actually applicable to all our health facilities and is actually monitored nationally. I know that all of us, do have a unified health check, and it does tell us exactly where to stock out and where to stock out. In the bigger facilities, we have installed, especially in the CAC, we installed a much more detailed stock management system called RX solution. This will be installed in the department of the facilities and it will also be installed in the state of hospital. This is actually providing a little bit much more high level system that is able to manage the medication within the system. The stock system now is implemented in over 7 states of our facilities. The real challenge, of course, is that the stock visibility system works on the basis that it should really be continually being updated by the staff, and they must do the stock all the time. And by the system does actually send information if it's not actually updated. And this is an area where we want to build more capacity from our users. The other area for medication availability is the CMC. We have actually been showing a lot of increase of patients, especially those who are on chronic medication, who have actually taken up the CMC, just to show that we have actually had a growth of 50.16% in number of patients registered between 2017. And those numbers increased from 105,000 to 235,000 in that year. This is a service that we really feel that it will make a huge difference in terms of making access to medication and really making patients not too poor and staying in clinics for a long time before medication has been. It's still an area where we find that we have an expenditure on non-contractive medicine and some surgical. This is an area where we still spend quite a huge amount of money at both of those areas. These, to ensure provision of contracts, we still have to make sure that these are absolutely the essential medicines in this, and they also meet the national standards and requirements. On the pharmaceutical, I think our biggest investment, one to make sure that it is really publicly and the RSO is fully utilized and managed and is kept up to date, because that gives us a good sense of where things are. We have in our depth of specialist environment in China, we're looking for a new warehouse management system so that we can better control the stock and medicines in that. We've been training our nurses on food stock management. And we'll move very quickly just to show the kind of rule the availabilities of medicines in terms of our ability to ARVs we are continually monitoring it on overall level, and 2% of all ARVs available, especially the first line, those are the ones that are available. And the TB medicines where on average about 50% availability, on vaccines about 89%. These numbers are slightly less than the national norm of 25% and some areas we will move very quickly to the forensic pathology service. The province in terms of the forensic pathology services, we are divided into four regions with the forensic pathology center. One is in Tata, another one is in Islandan, Queensland, and Brisbane. The facilities are graded as forensic pathology guidelines from M6 to M1. This mainly talks to the dissecting and coding facilities. They are 14 dissecting and 10 coding facilities. The Corona service is program right now for forensic pathology in order to establish the circumstances and cause of death, especially all the unnatural death. The program is actually functioning very well. On average, we have a turnaround time of 72 hours, and 4% of the post-mortem are done in 72 hours. We have 11 forensic pathology conversion papers, which are deployed, and we are actually also looking at upgrading our facilities and one has converted one in one month. There are challenges in the forensic pathology program. We do have a shortage of forensic pathology officers. This is not a big area where we have a lot of number of people. And one of the things that happens is that if we continually using them over time, and one of the things now in terms of the officers administration, was that it has actually been used over time for the presentation of the visitor center of that kind of basic month. We started to find that there are a lot of bodies that have not been trained in our offerings and that require proper services. One of the issues here is that proper services is supposed to be provided by a local government, and most of our local governments either they don't have money or they don't actually respond to that. So we do have bodies that have much longer than it is. There are no sufficient people in our sectors who are able to actually most of this in the province. The result is that most tend to take slightly longer, despite the fact that we're able to finish all our postmortems in 2 hours. We've been thinking that because trauma is a very big problem in the province, especially in motor vehicle accidents and death, not having a very good quality x-rays to do a very quick scan, it makes the process of autopsy slightly longer. One of the plans of the province is to buy these multiple, what's called rollers machines. These machines are able to do one scan at a time, and that will help them, the pathologists, to go and make a quicker diagnosis about what is really the nature of I just want to move very quickly to the TB program. The province, as part of the national strategy, we follow the 1990 strategy, which means that in the TB area as well, we're supposed to find 90% of the people with TB and put 90% of those who find the treatment, and then those on treatment, 90% of those should actually complete the treatment. We're not there yet, but I think that's really our plan. In relation to that, we've done a number of initiatives to really try and go out to the communities and work through some of our partners like the AIDS Council to really make sure that in the high risk areas and in the high risk population, we're able to find the people with TB, especially those with poor infection. There are a number of case-funding initiatives that we will do where we are actively finding and separate temporary and treat effectively and use some of the latest diagnostic systems like LAMP to find the TB patients. From the interventions, the TB has really been showing a kind of a much more difficult. The TB smear positive incidence was about 250,000 and really that was going so almost a decrease of about 250,000 reduction in 2015. We still have a very high rate in TB, like the national data measure, and part of the group, where the we have a number of interventions, both in the national and part of our plan for TB fighting. The TB treatment success rate in the province has increased between up to about 86%, which is slightly above the norms of 85. So we're doing fairly well in terms of the treatment success rate, which is at least getting people to finish their 6 months or treatment. Treatment success rate for TB the next one is really the problem of TB patients who are lost to follow up. And we, in terms of the numbers that we have, in 2014 we had about 134 patients who were lost to follow up, and these were translating to the rate of lost to follow up and outbreaks in the province in 2014, 3.7% of the patients were lost to follow up. These are people either who have decided no longer to continue to treat or who passed away and not been knowing or which are sent to other facilities. We've been working then on to that. I think in the 2016 we have a fewer number of people who are lost to follow up. And again, we have slightly more people who have. In particular, the other places like we did show a decrease, but in other areas we are not showing a substantial decrease in terms of cost of follow-up. In terms of TB management, we actually, the province has taken an important decision that all our patients who are communities will be required now to produce an IVN TB card, because part of our problem is really providing good quality care and actually making sure that we record people who follow up. That we don't have a unique identifier. We will also complement this by using the laboratory service to make sure that we're able to find people who have moved from one facility to the other in terms of the cross follow-up. There are a number of partners that are actually assisting us in the Nelson Mandela area and quite a lot of money. And we have identified a number of very distinct things where we've got a huge burden of follow up, and also building a very strong leadership in some of the screening by appointing operational managers and making sure that they understand the screening guidelines. We also exploring and doing more now to make sure that people who are to start TB have got some of the psychiatric services. The psychiatric services in their process, I know that we've been really under the spotlight in terms of the psychiatric services in the province of Karachi, the issues around power. And so it will be a little bit more on the team when we deal with the more issues on this. We have four psychiatric services, and then we have a team, and I'll have you. The psychiatric program is really focusing now on making sure that we are very close to the national mental health program. The Honourable Chair will recall that we've been there to the committee to talk about the psychiatric services and the work that's been done since that time. Obviously, the biggest challenge in the psychiatric services is to make sure that our infrastructure requirements meet the mental health infrastructure needs and action standards. There are a number of interventions, but what I thought maybe we would come back on to this, and Dr. McEwan would respond, will probably talk more to this, because I think it's a very detailed response and starting to respond to some of the issues that have been identified. So I'm not going to spend time on this. I will ask Dr. McEwan to come back to this if the chair allows me. We have done a number of interventions, especially in 2019, and one special time for this. Honourable Chairperson, we just want to put the committee on the issue around the town hospital. As the Honourable Chair and the members know, this necessity has become the Parliament, and the Minister has made a formal response to some of the questions that were there. And secondly, that the OMAS person is in the province right now, doing an investigation on the tower hospital. We had conducted our own with the assistance of Professor Singera, who's a psychiatrist, and we spent some time in the tower to understand some of those issues, and the NEC and the AOD and our own private team have been there. I think what I want to speak to right now is really to try to highlight some of those things that have already been that we were actually working on, and I don't want to propose that I am giving a full group on the psychiatrist. My expectation is that the ombudsperson will probably be the best person to really provide for the issue with a more concrete. The minister has a very successful report. Again, the minister's support and we have shared it with the ombudsman. But I think what we have done is just to really highlight. We have done a number of technical assessments, which was there by the Minister Vieira. And then we did report to the Minister on the basis of what we found from that committee, the committee report, and I think we share the report with the government. All the issues that we report and we prepared and they were raised and we understood as part of the we want that to highlight a number of interventions. One of them was that the CEO has, I think I want to very distinct on the matter of privacy, did ask for a bit of time and we moved there, the time is not actually allowed, so we moved there on the special week and we will be appointing a vaccine CEO. There are a number of disciplinary at the time of the investigation, again we'll get into details on those when we that there were a number of patients that were actually discharged from the institution. We thought we should, as part of the recommendation, to go out and look for those mental research and find where they are and be aware of which patients to respond to their issues. And then we have dealt with the medical officer who was reported to have made some changes on the values, and that has been reported to the health professional council. also are starting to build the proper capacity in the teams in the tower. We also thought we should go beyond the tower and start to look at all other hospitals and see whether they are in the there were some misdemeanors that were conducted and proposed to the institute in the process. The next area I'm going to speak to is the management of the medical waste. There are really two major issues on the medical waste. And I think it's something that we are just on our lap. Where we have dual facilities, where we've got facilities in rural areas, we do have the capacity in getting the ordinary waste from our facilities. We have a dedicated service provider that deals with medical waste, and those medical waste that are dealt with within the scale and get disposed of in terms of what is required. We have found that a number of methods that really need some improvement is that one of the biggest challenges in mixing the medical waste with the ordinary waste, I think the big issue there is really the cost of the products, because medical waste is dealt with in terms of the waste. There were instances around the where medical waste was found in the ordinary waste, and we have dealt with that for the service provider done for the medical waste. In general, we do really try to meet our obligations on the medical waste. We now have relooked and tried to make sure that we are looking at the priorities of medical waste in terms of revising the provincial waste management plan, and then in facilities, establishing waste committees, and also making sure that our pharmacists understand their responsibilities in terms of exposing and medication and fire drugs. And we also think of training of waste generators in different ways so that we have proper separation of waste. And now also thought we should really involve in the appointment of the waste collectors, because the waste system in terms of the model is that the person who actually deals with the waste in disposing of the waste much sooner than the thing that collectors would have had incidents where things did not lie according as planned. And obviously the situation of waste is making sure that the containers are complete and within the standards. The big challenges on waste management obviously have been inadequate suppression of waste by the generators. Not all facilities have dedicated waste management personnel. And in some instances, especially small things, have difficulties in making sure that they have adequate facilities to keep waste in a proper manner as they are required. And we have looked at a number of strategies to address come and sit where I'm sitting to deal with the financial performance and if you allow me, Chair.
No, that's fine. Okay, are you going to present today?
Yes, Honorable Chair. I'll just carry on through the slides as we go through the Okay, since you have technology helping us again. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, let me briefly present the financial performance. These are the numbers in our financial statements, 17-18. We spent, for all intents and purposes, 99.7% of our adjusted budget. As a total, we underspent about 64 million rand. On our conditional grants, we achieved 99.2% of our final appropriation. All of our programs show some level of expenditure after our final shift environments. You'll note that our goods and services overspent by about 24 million rand, which is primarily because of the increased demand for health services and for the payment of medical people. Payment for capital expenditure was underspent by 72 million rand. The primary issue there was some late deliveries. We were really pushing to get infrastructure and health technology equipment through. So we don't pay unless we've got a GRB. So we have a little bit of accruals. We have requested rollovers for both the equitable share and the additional grant. We've now achieved two unqualified audit opinions in a row, so this is 2017 and this is 2016, and we are quite confident that we will continue that going forward in the following year. We were asked to present issues around soft services as well. I think really the main soft service that we outsource as the province is security services. We've spoken about, this year spoken about medical waste, and there are isolated pockets of facilities where there are other soft services that are outsourced. So for example, at Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital, all the soft services are outsourced to third party service providers. I've spoken to those two slides. The painful slide. We've gone back and looked from 2010 to 2011 up to date. On medical legal settlements, we've paid 1.1 billion rand, and we've paid 433 million rand on legal fees. For last year alone, we paid 423.4 million rand for four quarters and 44.4 million rand to state attorney. The impact you can see, closing accruals, we still owe, even though we've paid 423 million rand, we still have 214 million rand worth of outstanding court orders, and even though we paid the state attorney 44.4 million, we owe them 248 million rand. The department is implementing a multi-pronged strategy, which we can delve into. It focuses on administrative, legal, clinical,
starting to make progress in the defence of the medical legal claims, and there are some interventions primarily with the SIU that are reaching out from the corrupt elements. That deals with the financial component and an element of the
support. Okay, I'm not quite sure what the only most likely to check up.
We have the SIU working with us on organizations, both within ourselves, but also looking at the broader issues within the legal industry around this particular thing. We've also brought in and strengthened, I'll talk about that, we've also appointed a consortium of legal experts, legal practitioners who have started to assist us in the defence to really assist the state's attorney. And the final area that you've got to look at is reporting. The strengthening of the legal defence capacity and came to the appointment of, I'd say, of a consortium, which has resulted in the prescription of the mother's personal claims being abandoned. There was a withdrawal of 5 matters, summons have been set aside, and the cost orders against the plaintiff. This has, in the last 6 months, resulted in a decrease in the contingent liability of 166 million rand. I think it's also important to note that the department, our province, has been very good to us. The province has allocated us an additional budget of the 2018 NCF of 2.2 billion 166 million rand to improve maternal and reproductive services in the 26 most highly litigated against facilities, which with additional investments in staffing, essential life-saving equipment and modern technology to monitor and identify high-risk pregnancies and to provide the best support for newborn babies to prevent birth-related harm and defects. All facilities that provide cesarean care have been provided with CPAP breathing support services, and to date we have appointed 1,715 out of the 1,845 posts which this money funded. So, Chair, as I said, that was maybe a little bit outside of the presentation.
But
so that
we don't miss it. It will be important and see that we forward that for us next people after something, so that we're able to compare in other provinces what the administration program that we have engaged on in terms of addressing the issues of the medical leader.
Okay. And
Honourable Chair, members, I'm going to be presenting on human resources. Starting with organisational realignment, the department macro structure has been approved by the MEC Honourable in March 2018 after concurrence had been sought by both OTP as well as the Department of Public Service and Administration. And from April 2018, we started rolling this out. The focus of the organogram is a number of areas of key focus. One, that is on delayering and decentralization of services to districts, with an emphasis on the re-engineering of primary health care, focusing on outreach as well as the implementation of the national health insurance. Emphasis on managing patients as close as possible to home and also entering into a social compact with the community. The organizational structure also aims for a lean health office structure that focuses in the main on strategy, policy formulation, monitoring and evaluation, as well as the promotion of integration across the platform. Another element that we are wanting to ensure through the delivery of this organogram was the alignment of health services in line with the national coverage on classification and management of hospitals, as well as the reduction of cost of the employment by ensuring cost-effective structures with optimal staff complement. The organizational reform is based on the new organogram that made provision for strong district and hospital management teams led by high-ranking leaders who are empowered to exercise management decisions to manage both resources as well as deliver quality services. To the extent that of the 8 districts that we have, currently they're being managed by district managers at director level, but these have been elevated to general manager level. In terms of the recruitment staff, there's just a slight typo that I want to bring your attention to, and my apologies for that, honourable members, on the vacancy rate that I said about Tom says, as at 31st March 2017, it should be 2018. But overall, we were given an amount of money for which the number of ARP or annual recruitment plans approved posts for non-clinical posts was 394, clinical posts 114, and grant posts 205. And the variance was only obtaining for the grant post. So overall, we performed at ensuring that filled positions of 691 within a vacancy rate of 9.5. This is versus where we are currently in terms of our ARP for the approved post for 2018-19, which is 473. In terms of continuing with the recruitment update, the department, we're proud to say and indicate, has appointed 5 senior managers, 4 of whom are women, and so the department has now exceeded its employment equity target and is standing at 50 at SMS level, and an additional allocation was also made. This in relation with the medical legal strategy that the CFO spoke to the department for filling of a number of posts in relation to both clinical and non-clinical posts in the 26 targeted hospitals. As of 31st March 2018, the department filled 1,495 posts, with the remainder being prioritized for this current financial year. The status of the appointments for 2017-18 is as follows, but if it goes and breaks down the what was approved in relation to both the medical legal appointments, clinical appointments, non-clinical, as well as the operational managers for PhDs, as well as ensuring that for all of the clinics we have operational staff. It's an indication of where we're standing in terms of the number of posts filled, which is 2,301. Against a target of 2,547, with a variance of 246, which has been factored into in this current financial year. Now, talking to governance and leadership. In terms of the governance and leadership, the executive management team, this is inclusive of the SG, the DDGs for clinical finance, as well as the HR clusters, have been appointed, so the stability at that level. In terms of the SMS posts, we're standing at 84% of SMS posts, 108 out of 128 being filled. There still is a challenge, honorable members, in terms of our physically challenged personnel, we were standing at 0.03. However, we're working on this, as this is also something that we need to be working in relation to issues of disclosure, as well as ensuring that the campaigns that are ongoing in the department. 6 out of the 8 district management posts have been filled, which is also great. coverage. Five of the eight regional and tertiary hospitals have permanent CEOs. The overall vacancy rate, as has been already indicated, stands at 9.5%. And hospital boards and clinic committees that provide oversight on hospital and PhD services are in place. Of the total 772 PhD facilities in Eastern Cape, 25 systems have approved clinic committees. And of the eight health districts, seven have functional district health councils. In terms of our PFDS, 98% of the SMSs contracted for the year 2017-18, as well as 98% of the SMSs disclosed in terms of the e-disclosure for the same period under review. Thank you.
The problem with applications is that you assume that we all know
in the management service.
In our management
service, sorry.
That's the problem. Understand. So infrastructure?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Once again, good evening, members and the Chair of the MC. Chair, the first slide, we are just taking you through what we have achieved in 2018 financial year. I think what we're noting is that we are pretty much strong investing in the NHI area. The our target is specific. We also have got our flagship project being completed. Namely, the Silamatuan Hospital is a fully fledged national hospital with five beds. Chair, we have also procured equipment as part of the medical legal intervention. We are focused largely on the 26 facilities provincial wide. We have largely focused on the broad maternity spaces. Provincial Chair, we now have a framework contract against which we are procuring equipment. We are also tapping into the National Health and Treasury's framework contract to procure equipment facilities across the province. With regards to maintenance, as a province, we have taken a different approach. We have now got to allocate funds to facilities for them to be able to conduct what we refer to as a first-line maintenance check. That strategy will be implemented henceforth. Over the 2018 MTF period, we see that we'll allocate no less than 500 million rand to deal with day-to-day maintenance issues that facilities they would complain about. These are typical issues such as cleaning the facilities, your broken windows, your door handles, your windows, your ceilings falling apart, roof leaks, downpipes, and those things that the committee keep on complaining every time they visit our hospitals and clinics in the province. With regards to your life support equipment, those are pretty much handled at a much more central level. Precisely because they are life training, or rather they are life support equipment. Things like your boilers, generators, the theater, ecosystem, vacuum pumps, your motor fridges, your laundry kitchen, your lift maintenance, and those things. What we've done here, we have again following a framework approach, i.e., we've got some tender looking for contractors who are competent to be able to look after these equipment in terms of the region where they are located. This will be over a 2-3 year period. The key to this is the issue of building skills. We have asked the contractors to employ minimum in a contract no less than two young professionals. The intention will be is for us to have our own in-house capacity once the corporation becomes to an end. the countries at length provide skills in this area. So I think as a province, we've said we can't use the opportunity of just appointing contractors and do this work, but they have done it, disappear. We then go back to square number one. I did discuss this issue on the slide. Really, the approach for us is to ensure that our equipment is safe and pretty much reliable. Two, we want to ensure business continuity. Three, we are wanting to save the cost, particularly because, Chair, if you follow an unplanned maintenance regime, there is a wastage in the process. You call contractors and things are falling apart, they charge you prices actually pretty much quite high. Chair, in terms of the items spoke about that facilities, we asked them to look into on this slide. Those issues, Chair, that I think, truly speaking, hospitals should be able to handle in-house without requiring extensive support from the contractor and or head office. Chair, I think the main issue, this is our visualized model of improving maintenance in the province. As things stand, we don't really fix anything. We respond to crisis. We are wanting to move from a don't fix to an active, eventually to a planned maintenance where you'll be able to grow to become predictive and predictive. And of course, the system will eventually run itself. You can only do that once you have got framework contracts in place. You've got people who will be ready to fix your problems before a crisis arises. As things stand, we just wait for things to happen. We run around, look for a contractor who can't fix. The time they can't fix, the equipment is damaged beyond repair. We are then forced to replace that equipment. Chair, in terms of providing an update with regards to the intervention we're making on psychiatric facilities, in the province, we do have dedicated psychiatric projects. The first one is Magdalene Hospital within the Amatolan region. There are plans in place. We intend to go to tender sometime in July to provide a 2-hour observation psychiatric unit. It will provide for now 8-bedded unit, four women and four men. We have got St. Barnabas in our Tambo. That project is near completion. We'll finish it before the end of June 2018. It's a 28-bedded unit. We have got the Holy Cross in our Tambo again. That one, again, we intend to open tender in July 2018, but construction will be finished before the end of the 2019-20 financial year. Cecilia Makiwane, with a two-pronged approach, we do have an existing 50-bedded psychiatric unit. We are providing minor refurbishment work to it. The contractor is on site. They will finish before the end of June. The plan originally was to actually build a new psychiatric unit. Unfortunately, given the overall fiscal constraints, we had to abandon that plan. The new plan is for us to use the old CMH building to provide more decent space for the psychiatric clients. We intend to be able to intend that will be an 18-month project. As a member, Gomani Hospital, which is a dedicated psychiatric hospital in Queenstown, in Christian, we had quite a number of projects in 2014. We did some work there, largely focusing on the male admission and the semi-acute submission. In 2016, we had just gone to renovate a ward, ward 16, creating 30 usable beds for male forensics. In 2018-19, we've just gone to appoint a contractor who will equally assist us to provide a 30-bed for male to discharge. The last project we are planning to take up in tender before September is to renovate the existing ward. It's called Ward 5 and Ward 6. We are hoping that those will give us 50 usable bed spaces for male forensics. That will be projects that we intend to complete in 2019-20 financial year. With regards to Tower Hospital, I think the HOD has spoken at length on Tower Hospital. The main issues that we picked up was the poor standard of the seclusion rooms, largely in Ward 7A, which is made medium street ward, Ward 6A, which is your main acute ward, and Ward 2B, which is your female acute ward. Indeed, there is a contractor on site doing some work for us, modifying those seclusion rooms to be in line with the current standards for psychiatric units. We are going to be finishing that work on the 27th of July 2018. We then have got Honorable Chair Elizabeth Duncan Hospital. Here, Chair, we have got a two-pronged approach. EDH is currently operational. We have got clients inside it, and therefore there are certain things we've got to do. Of paramount importance is for us to provide them with an OPD, as well as doing some minor repairs for the existing infrastructure. Medium long term, we are looking at the cost effectiveness of moving a VTH to Dorandina, the hospital. There are plans which are costed. If I may mention the cost of the plans, they are coming at 750 million rand to create a dedicated psychiatric, shall I say, unit within Dorandina Hospital. We intend to use the existing infrastructure in Dorandina, the old buildings in Dorandina. We don't really have that money. We are engaging with Mission Health to see what extent can they be able to help us to resolve the issue of EDH. Precisely because we know that there's a question raised around the infrastructure of EDH, as well as the noise pollution arising from the airport close to it. We also have got PE provincial, again, PE broadly speaking, a space problem for psychiatry clients. In PE, we are providing a 40-bedded mental unit. The contractor is on site. This is going to be a 6-month project. We intend to finish this in January, February next year. I think for infrastructure, those are the updates. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. We primarily covered the major area. Just as a conclusion, we recommend that the committee notes the state of health services in the province for the year ended 31st March 2018. And then the committee notes the health services are under pressure because of the demand for additional services, coupled with the impact of medical legal claims. I am going to stop the chair. I know we've taken up quite a lot of your time. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, MEC and the HOD. I was just saying to the four members asked questions. I don't think the sector we should have adopted an approach that says all businesses must be here when presentations are made, so that you are able to understand the perceived gap between the proposal that presented the just from the take. I will comment later about that. So, unfortunately, something is here, so to listen on how questions and responses are being maybe moving forward, that's what we will do. But I will reflect on some of the areas that I do think that we will think that it's important that we reflect so that when we request you to do ABCD, you will understand. Honourable members, day presentation from Eastern Cape. Questions? Wants to start? Honourable Wilson. Honourable Maganda. So to Honourable Tabagwan, Honourable Michael. Honourable Gomes. And that's all. Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Eastern Cape, for your presentation. And I think, like most provinces, it's very apparent that the provincial medical departments are under extreme duress. And I think this is reflected in the OHSC report. And unfortunately, Eastern Cape is one of the poorest performers of the entire, of all of the provinces. In the OHSC report, I understand you have the most hospitals, but unfortunately, you have the lowest scoring results of all the provinces, and I think that is concerning. Because I think that also reflects in what we're seeing in your plans. Okay, hospitals and things that are not compliant is when you're going to have problems, and when you've got problems, those who you often need to medical claims. So I think that is a concern. But I want to deal specifically with the medical legal claims. Obviously there are huge claims and huge legal fees to be met by the department. You're not alone. I think we are going to find this in every single province that we interact with over the next couple of days. Principally though, those things are not budgeted for. Okay. And you talked about accruals, and your accruals are vast. We're looking at 214 million and 257 million on the legal costs. It's a hard way to start a year with those kind of accruals. But that's just the medical accruals. What I'd really like to know is what is the real figure overall of your accruals going into the new financial year? Because if that's just the medical, I'm pretty sure there's lots of others. That's a concern for me. What we don't see in this presentation, and we'd really like some information on that, and I think, Chair, they might have to give us a written response on this one, is the number of specialists you have, obviously per how many patients, how many are in each hospital, what they're responsible for, whether it be anaesthetists, orthopods, cardiacs, gynae. We have specialists in all of those spheres. We would like to know how many there are per, say, 100,000 patients, what is the area of speciality, and what is your shortage? Because with that will become, then you can let us know what are your surgery backlogs looking like. Because in some of the areas that we've spoken to, surgery backlogs are tremendous, and that is an area of great concern. And it's a very great concern, I think, for all of us, because if we are going to go into the NHI, we can't do that with no medical facilities. We can't do that with no specialists. We can't do that with non-compliant hospitals. We can't do that when all of these things are wrong. Those things all have to be corrected first. And then lastly, Chair, there's no mention here of a regular expenditure. There's no mention here of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I think it was perfectly covered that there is a concern that the OHSC report says of all the facilities that they visited there, 41% of your facilities that were visited were critically non-compliant. 39% were non-compliant with urgent intervention required. And when I read through where you scored really, really low, I'm in the OHSC report. They are all marked extreme, essential, or vital, that actually gets intervention and takes very seriously. And I think that's concerning, and it's, I think it's particularly concerning for you guys to have to try and get this into line, but we will have to get it into line. And then just lastly, because the media reports say that the likelihood of many claims This was the last lesson to many tragedy we had in South Delhi. The claims on that are absolutely astronomical, as we can imagine, but that amount is going to be split between the provinces, because it can't be paid from one central province. So if you have any information on that, have that been discussed with you, or are the media talking about it? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. On slide 14, where it relates to the EMS challenges and then response. On the responses to EMS challenges, you stated that the department is working on a plan to move EMS based hospitals and CHC as currently properties are either privately owned or directly done. My question is, how long could such a transition take? On the same slide, on the scarcity of skilled EMS personnel, how many does the province need and how great is the urgent? Will job oversaturation not cause a problem in the future if there is no target number of EMS personnel set? To address the shortage of forensic pathology specialists to cover the full spectrum of the service. On your response there, I just want to find out if you have now place those two forensic pathology specialists for 2018-19 in Jakarta and East London. And then, Chair, the last one on slide 27. Where it speaks on the psychiatric services under the general challenges. There are few mental health specialists to cover the entire province. So now, how are you currently doing to ensure the province is well served?
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm just going to start with information as reflected in OHSC pertaining to the pharmaceutical services, where the average subdomain score. Obviously, it was 48%, but my problem is, in the report itself, they made mention of the fact that pharmacists and therapeutics committee in HEs were not functional, and some committees operated without TOR. The same paragraph mention is made of medicine and medical supplies were not procured nor managed in compliance with the relevant legislations and supply chain management, and also that stock control systems, including stock take reports for medicine and medical supplies, were not in place. Whereas in your slide 18, according to your planned intervention, you plan to expand the use of stop visibility system. Why not, in actual fact, getting this stop control system, including stop taking course and all those facts that I mentioned as per findings of the OHSC? Why don't you get those things first right before you expand? I mean, you are planning to expand on aspects that are not working at all. So you rather go and rectify what has been found out as not working before an expansion. That is number one. And then there is also mentioned made also in the report about the health emergency and disaster preparedness. If there's an outbreak of diseases in the province, according to this information, the average subdomain score is as low as 14%, which obviously means the level of the disaster preparedness in the province is very low. So what mechanisms do you have in mind to be ready for such a outbreak? Because they said earlier disaster management plans were not available, which obviously means if such a thing can happen, then obviously you'll never be able to solve the outbreak as it may occur. Going forth, slide 37, overlapping. This is in connection with the security services, where you mentioned that it's completely outsourced. Not only the security services. We're talking about security services, the garden services, inclusive of the cleaning services, which are in the province, in your section, outsourced. Why not in sourcing? Can we have a reason why they are not in sourced? Maybe such problems will never occur in future. And further, the information on page 40, I think it's in connection with the staff welfare and employee wellness. In the findings of the report, the province was also scored below 20%, 18%, which obviously one of the things that is mentioned is that there was no evidence that the HEs had zero tolerance for on violence and abuse against staff, including trauma counseling and support. I mean, this aspect speaks to the staff in the health sector. And then we have to improve this 18%. How do you intend to make an improvement on the staff wellness? Because staff wellness obviously encourages the rate of the working of the people towards the improvement of the health information. But on a positive note, I would like to comment on the slide on page 53. On page 53, that talks about the journey to operational excellence. And to say this one is very good, especially if it can be applied as it is on the picture. And if it was possible, the other provinces can, if it's possible, learn from you. I mean, if there's an inclusion of a section that looks to improve the efficiency of different health programs, then this is one of the aspects that definitely I would applaud the progress on doing it. Why? Because if there is a problem, it's realized, it's known before, and it's rectified, especially when it comes to the infrastructure. And lastly, say we have questions or we have queries that we receive from the community in our country. is the MEC ready to can receive the complaints directly from us as members of parliament so that we can refrain from writing letters to the Minister of Health while the province has got the MEC and the committee that works with the head? Should it be accepted? What is the number to call? And I think if it's accepted, then we'll obviously be able to can escalate the problems through the province rather than directly to the Minister of Health. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Vice President. Then to the Honourable Consul.
Thank you, Chair. This report is extraordinary. It is, I don't think all said and done, the comrades, all said and done, the department sat down and really tried to give us a report that would make our minds settle that we got a very strong report. It's extremely vague and unstructured, I don't know. Let me just show you what I'm trying to say. Most of these things here haven't got any finance attached to them. It's just that there was this was done, this was done, this was done. Let me just show you. There is the 36 under expenditure is about how much? 307. Okay, and it is said that all projects are underspending, there is underspending, and I don't, you can't fail to spend, you rather overspend, but fail to spend. Now, the department spent 3.8 billion of conditional grants on what? It doesn't say what we spend that money on. It's just 308 billion. And all projects must show underspend. Now, that's telling that say you spend so much, you don't say what you spend it on. And you underspend, on top of that. Maybe somewhere, medical, legal, okay, fine, that is something. Reduction on cost of employment by ensuring cost-effective structure with optimal staff complement. Then you have 92 posts that are not filled. So that maybe you'll explain what that means. Slide 46, infrastructure project. All new staff accommodation, new clinic, new staff accommodation, blah, 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 fine. That a bit show where you spend your money on. But then are these clinics, do they qualify to be ideal? Or were they NHI clinics, or they are just replacing clinics, demolished and built and all sorts of things. Did you have NHI in mind when you were replacing these clinics? It is just replacing new clinics and accommodation, and that does not say anything to us. We expect more out of that. Was there no audit in 2017, 2018? Not yet. The only audit is that in 2016, 2017, where you got the clean audit. So that is good, but now we want to know what currently the situation is. Fifty and fifty-one, no financials attached to this. Infrastructure 54, 55, no financial attached to this. It's just that there was this and well this. We don't know whether how much that can cost or what is used. I don't know. Maybe you explain. That's 54, no, 50, 51, 54, 55. maybe if they can, that was, those are cases, maybe they are flies, I don't know, but they are cases. So the rest, that I tried hard to try and find out that that's why, but I realized that maybe this needs to be rewritten, and so that we can make head or tail of it for the same, for the record. I mean, it is like this, it is not very good. It doesn't say that, doesn't give a good impression. Thanks.
The chair, I have only three questions, or not questions, but slides to talk to. Slide number six speaks of district hospitals. District hospitals, 66 of them, offering 24-hour services. My interest is to know how many, or not the number, just the spread, because if you look at slide 6, there are 66 district hospitals offering 24-hour service, and there are low socioeconomic structures, and there are regions poorer than the other in the province. Basically, that is the reason why I want to know whether this house, the spread of these 66 district hospitals, I mean, district, with the clinics that offer the 24-hour service. I'm very interested to know that. Number two, slide number 10. Target of rural calls in 45 minutes has not been met. The nature of the infrastructure, particularly the roads in the rural areas, is largely gravel roads, and in some places transport of vehicles cannot access these places completely, altogether. Now, the question is, the provincial department collaborating with the other departments, such as transport and related, because Department of Health alone will not be the cure or the medicine to the challenges of roads infrastructure. I'm asking this question, Chair, because I have particular or specific districts or roads of a district like the Joker, a road that takes you at 40 kilometer travel, but to get to the final destination, you travel for 2 hours. That is now the road from Stagsbridge to Peranava. That road is bad. So that's the question why I'm specific about it. I know it's my province, maybe
are interest, but I'm quoting a region or a district that I don't live in an existing city because I am Buffalo City. I'm not Junker. Jesus just an example. If that could be clarified, and maybe that spread we provide us with exactly where these 24-hour clinics are, that would help. The reason is that we are now, all of us, including the ESF, we are going out on recess and preparing for re-election. So we need to be open to you guys, I mean, and actually make mention of the priorities or what do they call it, Mama? The low-lying fruits or the quick win. We look at that. And the last one, Chair, was a set three. Is slide number 18. Slide number 18 deals with what? I just made a note on this one. Oh, planned interventions. Expand the use of stock visibility system and RX solution. Introduce a new warehouse management system for the pharmaceutical depots. There again, you know, I want to align myself to Honorable Minister in as far as that slide is concerned. Time frames and specific and exactly, you know, that kind of response is really required. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I will just reflect on just some observations and direct questions from the others. It can be a comment from the others, but it's useless for me to ask questions because I don't think we have read the information as we would need. But I'll have to start with slide number 56. You know, I think this report, for some people, does not know this in case. A person who doesn't know what camera is. I'll just take an example. Tower Hospital, the word I know, I've taken here, she's a district. Or what? But they said to a yellow. They say, super form, crematorium. So I'm just saying, in next to Tower Hospital, is in which district? Because remember that we are members of different political parties. We have got our own program. If I can make an example, all of my family is saying something. He wants to go and hear this and hear the interest. He wouldn't know. Whereas if you look into the report, said, oh, okay, Tower Hospital is in first report, then so that's what I just want to. But secondly, MC, when is this problem of the landing? There is something MC HOD, this problem of Elizabeth Duncan and the landing. We don't have questions now anymore because communities are asking when, and this has been a program, that's why a project that has been there for more than 5 years. So that's why I'm afraid to the NEC. That's why I'm straight to the HOD. That I think now we must get a what exactly is the problem with that. In terms of the ideal clinic, again, the weakness is that, for instance, if you say the ideal clinic on page slide number 8, the ideal clinic, there is one in Kusan, which is in Platinum. Where in Kusan? I think that's the problem, is that they are not specific. But I will talk about that when I want to comment one area has been raised by Honorable Telugwan is that with the all provinces that have presented, you are the only one that has applied to when, where are you going to train the emergency services, the program that you are having in Kusatu. And I think that is commendable. But I will also reflect when we round up what is the information that we will need in specific areas. Because it's really going to be very important. The last question that I think you can respond, when we conducted an oversight in Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital, that was in 2015, catering was outsourced. Catering was outsourced. Can we be told what is the situation? Catering, among other things, I don't want to go to security and others, but catering was outsourced, and I would have expected in the report to say that it was, I know that you were saying at this and given a particular time, you are going to phase out the catering in the security sector, that because you couldn't then stop abruptly contracts that you have. And therefore, by this time, it would be advisable that then highlighted those, because in terms of outsourcing and insourcing, we are very firm that we think that public hospitals must insource. We know that it's not going to be a blanket thing, it's going to be phased, but we have appreciated if you have then said, we think that by this financial year, by this time, in terms of outsourcing, would be. What we will just give you, if you are ready to respond now, it's fine. We will give you just 5 minutes to say who's going to respond where, and then we'll come back, because the last one is then going to be something. Can you just have 5 minutes?
I checked on the response on slide 6, if they could also include the possibility of increasing the number from 56, 24-hour types of clinics.
Can we just have a contact date for 5 minutes, and then come back 5 minutes?
Let me transform.